Support for this podcast comes from the Nelson Atkins Museum of Art, presenting A Frame of Mind, a new podcast taking a look at race in America through the lens of the museum's past, present, and future. Available now wherever you listen to podcasts. Learn more at nelson-atkins.org.
This is Up to Date on KCUR 89.3. If you're the product of an interracial marriage, the question will look you in the eye early in your life. Who are you? And how should people describe you? Half-breed? Mixed race? A new book, Half and Half, is a candid story about the daily struggles of those who have one white parent and one black. Author Eric Smith knows what he's talking about because he's the product of an interracial marriage himself. He came from Chicago and then moved to Leavenworth, where he found himself more on guard than he had been on the South Side. The book raises the question of whether we are any closer today to accepting people for who they are before looking at their skin color. Eric Smith, the author of Half and Half, joins us now. Eric, good morning. Nice to have you here.
Good morning, Steve. Big fan of Up to Date.
I appreciate that. Thank you. And Yes, sir. You raised the question on the back cover of your new book. So I'm wondering what you call the product of an interracial marriage.
Well, product of an interracial marriage is,
a half-breed, mixed race. What do you call yourself?
I call myself an African German American.
Okay.
So that I can pay respect to my father who served in World War II in Korea. He's a black man, African American, and my mother. So that's why, for myself, my mother being German from Berlin, raised in Berlin. And when I do it like that, I don't use mulatto. Some people use mulatto. I don't. I use African German American. I've been using it ever since I just before I went into the Air Force. That's what I put down on my, my race.
Well, why did you want to write this book?
I saw that there were some young people that in my own family, because we go from shades of extremely light to dark complected, and I saw that those questions and those things that I was dealing with and my sisters were dealing with in the 60s and the 70s, people were still dealing with them in present time at that time, which was a few years ago. And so I got a chance to work with some young people, and I saw that they were shy. They were a little timid when it came down to a race. And I would ask them, and they didn't know what they were. And that's literally, so.
And one of your points in the book is that's an awfully tough place to live.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. My mom and my dad, my father taught me how to be tough. And of course I had to be tough. I went to Calumet High School, came out of Cabrini Green, ninth floor, 929 North Hudson, moved to Southside, 82nd and Emerald. So he taught me how to be tough. My mother, she was more of the education. She set us all around a table and we all had to do homework. Didn't care whether you're in first grade, eighth grade, sixth grade. But they never talked about what I used to say is elephant in the room. They didn't tell us, when they would say, well, kids are picking on you, or this adult or that adult is saying that just because they're trying to be mean or rude. And what I found out is that that's not the case. Sometimes just being different, people want to know. And I think that had they set us down and told us, that you guys are you could say black and German, African, German, American, had they given us more of an identity, I wouldn't have had to, my identity came through fighting. I was a fighter. And my sisters went through their various things, but, a lot of it, as we got older, we said came from not really identifying.
This idea that you weren't one or the other exclusively, you grew up in the projects of Chicago here, Eric, in the notorious Cabrini Green development. How did that affect your childhood in that tough environment? You've already referred to yourself as a fighter. I'm guessing in that world, you had to fight a few times.
Yeah, my grandson is a freshman, Eric III, and he asked me a question not too long ago. He said, He said, "Papa, how many fights do you think that you had?" And I'm age appropriate when I'm talking to the kids. So he's 15, a freshman. And I said, about 20 a week. And he froze. He said, 20 a week? I said, yeah. Now, half of those were what we used to call knockdown dragout. It was, I had more black eyes, and I'm surprised my teeth wasn't knocked out. But then the other part of it was simply wrestling or slap boxing that turned into fights. But the majority of this, Steve, came from me being this, what they call in the hood or any city in America calls somebody high yellow, referred to, you know, you as high yellow. Mm-hmm. But even light-skinned black or light-skinned African-American was treated different than half-breeds. Wow. Meaning that you got things from grown-ups. What are you? If I had a dollar for every time somebody asked me and my sisters, what are you? I'd be able to take my wife probably to Europe for a month.
And what were kids reacting to? Just this idea, Eric, that you were a little different? Is that what this boiled down to?
Well, different, skin color. I was average build. I was set out as far as my speed. I was pretty quick. If you have that many fights, you become good at fighting. So I got pretty good at it, but I was also very fast. I played all the sports. Even coaches, I wrote in my book, even coaches would say, hey, I didn't pick you on the team because I didn't think that yellow guys was tough enough to make my team.
Wow. Wow. Well, I was struck that your reputation as a fighter was such that even later in your upbringing, when you moved to Leavenworth, the new principal at the school you were about to attend looked you in the eye and said, I know something about who you are. You're a fighter. He knew about you even before you started out at Leavenworth.
Yeah. Yes, I'm sure that the school had to, my mother said that the school had, I guess they called Calumet High School back then. Mr. Jackson was the president, very intimidating man. He's about 6'2", 6'3", I think. Yes. Just, he's a very, very, he's a nice man, but he's very intimidating, you know, at the time. And he just told me, he said that, I'm not going to have any gang banging going on. He gave me the talk, and I'm a kid. I said, yo, I'm not wasn't in no gang. And he said, yeah, okay. Well, you know, he probably made some calls and heard about Gangster Disciples, Blackstone Rangers, you know. And I was considered a good student. I fought a lot, but, you know, he gave me a pass because they knew that my fights came legitimately from either trying to be robbed or singled out because of, me being mixed.
I'm visiting with author Eric Smith about his new memoir titled Half and Half. It's the story of his upbringing as a product of a parent, one parent who was black, one parent who was white. So at the end of the day, how important was being accepted to you at high school, in middle school, for just being who you are?
It was very important to me and my sisters, but it wasn't really spoken of. We couldn't articulate. I wasn't able to start looking at things until I probably went into the service when I saw a lot of people from different places, and it came down to one thing. This is what I hope the message is that everybody would like to, especially when you're younger, you'd like to fit in. You don't want to be an object of hate.
Right.
You don't want to be the object of indifferent just simply because somebody looking at you. There was a guy that I looked back and he summed up everything. He used to look at me crazy all the time. I turned 14. He kind of knew my reputation that, you know, I kind of carried different things. So he just wanted to run up on me. He's a couple years older. He looked at me. I said, man, what is your deal? He said, oh, I hate people that look like you. Now understand, nobody, four or five guys I was with, the couple he was with, nobody looked like me. You understand? Mm-hmm. And so when he said that to me, I was remembering that going home, and I thought, how could somebody, he don't really know me, he sees me in school. How could he say he hates me And I didn't talk to anybody about it, but that really bugged me probably until I moved to Leavenworth, Kansas.
Wow. Wow.
To have somebody look at you and say they hate you simply because of the way you look. And this is, I think, if our parents, Steve, and this is what I like to say in my message. Listen, if parents, whatever mixed race you are with your children, you know, if parents would give their children some information on what they are, the mixture, embrace both cultures, both races, both nationalities, embrace it. Don't run from it. Yes, I had my mom. I favor my dad, but I'm just yellow. He was brown. And they used to say that, you know, but I didn't know, if I would have known that I could have said, hey, you know, I don't have to be like one or the other. Mm-hmm. I have a picture that I look like Patrick Mahomes in my freshman year in high school. Every time I look at this boy, I think myself, that's what I look like when I was a freshman.
Our guest again, Eric Smith, author of Half and Half, a memoir of growing up as a product of a white parent and a black one. Let's go to Vaughn from Raymore. Vaughn, you're on Up to Date.
Hello, good morning. Thank you so much for taking my call.
You
bet. Thank you so much for your guest. I just wanted to share three things. I'm African American and my husband is white and we have a daughter. And although in our country, when you have just one drop of African American blood, you're considered to be black, we're going to raise her that she's both because she is. And also the term half breed is really offensive. So I hope and pray no one is using that as a standard way to describe anyone, because that's just not a word that we would use to describe our daughter at all. And I would say that there was someone famous who's also, I don't want to mention her name, but she's the product of two different parents of two different cultural backgrounds. And she said that she gets the question a lot of, what are you? What are you? And the interviewer said, well, why do you think people ask you that? And her answer was priceless. She said, because they're trying to determine how to treat you. Huh. So those are just the things that I wanted to share. So thank you guys so much. And thank you to the author. Really great show on this. Thank you, guys.
Yeah, appreciate that, Vaughn. And do you agree with that? Is that why people ask you that question all the time, Eric?
Yeah, I think some of it is just strictly inquisitive. It's like if you saw somebody and you don't know, like I look Latino. I've been accused of Cuban, Puerto Rican, you know. And so I agree with her, but also I think that sometimes it's not even done in mean spirit. Sometimes people just want to know, what nationality, to look like this, what are you? So sometimes it's not even done in a mean spirit. It's just inquisitive.
Mm-hmm. When was the first time that you realized you were biracial? Do you recall the moment?
Yeah. Yeah. I can tell you this. I've said in my book, I believe that 10 to 11 is an age of consciousness of what's going on. Meaning that I was running around a very dangerous neighborhood. Anybody knows Chicago knows that South Side, West Side. I mean, but I was running around and I was making money, errand boy, car wash type deal.
Mm-hmm.
And these guys had told me and my friend Alvin, I don't want to use the N-word, but anyway, he said, you N's need to slow down. He said, salt and pepper, hey, white boy, you need to slow down. You ain't gonna make all the money. And later on that day, I was sitting on Teddy Haney's porch. Anybody from the area knows Teddy Haney, God rest his father, got killed by somebody. But we sit on his porch and it could be 10, 15, 20 of us. And we were talking and laughing. And I asked my friend Alvin, when he was getting ready to walk back down to the house. And I said, hey, man, I said, does that kind of thing go on all the time with you? And he looked at me, and I've been knowing this guy since we were in kindergarten or first grade. And he said, yeah. He said, my mom told me I need to be careful, Eric. And I said, what do you mean be careful? He said, because of how you look and who you are. He said, I don't care. He said, but yeah, he said, and I started noticing that, you know, people would say things. And like I said, so 10 or 11 is when I really started noticing that people would ask. Mm-hmm. And I mean, and these would be teachers. These would be preachers.
Huh. Everybody.
Yeah, they'd said the nickname in a black community for a yellow person or high yellow or a half breed or half mixed person, it's not mulatto, it's red.
Mm-hmm.
They'll call a woman or a young lady red bone, and they'll call a guy like me. They'll say, "Hey, red, come here." So even if they don't know your name, or they're not sure your name, or even if they do know your name, they say, "Red, come here." You know, and so 10 is when I started noticing it.
Right.
And I asked my father, I must have been in fifth or sixth grade. And he always, you know, would say something like, you know, people just stupid, Eric. And I started noticing when I got older, everybody's not stupid, you know? I mean, you know,
what's that about? You know? Right.
Right. Right. So that was his deal. My mom, I think my mother felt a little more, maybe she didn't feel comfortable, you know, with coming out. She would just say that people are not, you are not going to be, you all are not going to be considered white.
And she actually felt guilty over the years. She would tell you that, sort of confess to you her worries that what she had done to you, in a sense.
Oh, yeah, man. I can remember it. I'm Steve, March 4th, I'll be 62. And I can remember this. My mother passed on, both of them passed on, but I, you know, I'm a mama's boy. So, you know, I can remember this. My mother walked with me and she had tears and she said, "I'm so sorry for what I've done."
Yes.
If you're a mama's boy, you know, I went on high alert because I don't want to share some things, some fights and some things that I've done to protect my mother. But it modern times, I might have been incarcerated. But with that being said, it really hurt me to my heart. I think my eyes swole up. And I said, you know, what are you talking about? You know, and because she was my everything, you know,
mm-hmm.
You know, and yes, yeah, she felt like she brought on this type of pain. My sisters probably talked about it more than I did. They were tough now because my mm-hmm. sisters didn't fight like girls, Steve. They fought like guys. They could box. I mean, but yeah, so my mother felt. You know, my father never really addressed it. He was more saying, "Watch these thugs you're hanging out with." Right. Well, these are the guys that I hung out with since I've been in first grade.
Eric, let me do this. Let's go to Nick from Kansas City, Missouri. Nick, you're on with Eric. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. What's up, Eric? A homeboy. I'm also from
what's
Chicago.
Up, brother,
I was born and raised. How's it going, man? I'm from the north side, but I've done some dirt on other parts. However, what I wanted to say, because you were talking and then you kind of circled back here, you know, about your mother. Now, I'm also biracial, and yeah. I didn't have my father at all. And so I was very fortunate because I'm noticing a lot now. I'm also a father of biracial sons, and I'm not with their mother. I do see them very regularly. But I worry about the impact of her cultural ignorance as a white woman. So I was very fortunate that my mother, as a white woman, was very culturally adept at what I would be facing as a young black man, no matter what my race was, and the world was going to see the color of my skin and you know, impact me and imprint to me that way. So it's just a thing. And you had mentioned how, you know, you were very hurt by your mother's shortcomings culturally, how she could portray or how she could, you know, prepare you for the world as a black man.
Right.
So it's what I wanted to say basically is I you know, I'm going to get her your book, my twin's mother. But it's something that concerns me about what we're facing in this
right.
day and age, this new right. world we're looking at, where there's a lot of biracial relationships with biracial children
right.
or interracial relationships, and just finding ways and not biting my nails over how we prepare young black men, especially.
Just being straight with them, just talking to them when you get them, just, you know, and if they're age appropriate, if they're old enough, you know, you can say, but if they're young, you know, just by you being around them,
mm-hmm.
you know,
mm-hmm.
just by you being a strong man and being around them, and then ask them, "Hey, how you doing in school? Is anybody, you know, what's going on?" Because a lot of parents run around here, And this parent, you know, is white, you know, European American. This parent is black, and they go on about their business. Nobody comes up to him and said, you know, 10 times a day, "Hey, man, what are you?" Mm-hmm. And they don't, "Hey, girl, what are you?" You know, they don't do that. So I tell people, the message of my book is that just talk to your children and let them know, listen, you know, you can't say, like I told my grandson, 6 years old, he said, singing loud, "I'm black and I'm proud." I said, "Liam, looking at you, they're not going to know. You have to tell them that you're African and Salvadorian American." And let me tell you why I said that, Nick, because if you look at him, he's olive colored, you know, mm-hmm. and he's handsome as he want to be. But if you just put a dashiki on him and let him go in there and hold his fist up, talking about, "I'm black and I'm proud," people will say, "Yo, man, what's wrong with this dude,
right,
man? Are
right.
you perpetrating? Are you faking? Are you fronting?"
Hey, no. Eric, I need to get to another call here. I think this is someone you're going to recognize. This is Stephanie from Oklahoma. I think Stephanie's your sister, Eric.
Yeah. This is who I learned how to box from, Steve.
Stephanie, I'm glad to have you on the show.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
You
and
bet.
Thank you for having my brother.
You bet. Go ahead, Stephanie.
What's up, Steph?
Well, good morning, Tank. I call my brother
morning,
Tank because he was like a Abrams Tank.
Mm-hmm.
And nothing stopped him.
Wow.
Absolutely nothing. We really should have been twins. We're only 14 months apart. So our voices are alike. We look alike. My hair is short like his. I mean, we just, our hearts are intertwined. And I felt for my brother. I really did, because he had no one to go to with his questions and his concerns. Having seven sisters, we talked amongst ourselves.
Right.
But I think we just assumed, my brother, he's a male, he's strong. He always portrayed a sense of strength that we just assumed he was okay.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, nobody really can be okay when you're not accepted anywhere, even as adults. And it's a shame that we have so much race mixing that in the next, I would say, 10 years, we will be the majority.
Yeah.
The biracial people, we will be the majority. But
Stephanie, I'm running short of time here. I'm going to have to scoot on. Eric, before I forget the most basic question here, where can folks get Half and Half, your new book?
Yeah, you can get it at Barnes & Noble, Amazon.
Okay.
You can also get the e-book at Kindle.
Okay, that sounds good. Well, Eric, what a pleasure to have you here, and how much
Steve,
I appreciate
like I said,
your candor. Yeah.
This just made me a big fan of you, your update. I love what you did on interracial, on the adoption deal.
Oh, good.
I love that.
Yeah, I appreciate that. Yeah. And I appreciate your candor in this new book. Again, it's titled Half and Half, the author, Eric Smith.